Hi, welcome to the Rookies Podcast, where we answer all of your questions about ministry from our position of excellence. And Rio has like 20 years of ministry experience as a 30-year-old man. We were just going through it. He's been at 10 churches. So he's not really a rookie. I'm not really a pastor. And Daniel's excellent. So we're just lying to you. But we're excited to talk today about some kind of a grab bag of topics. First was kind of just some recent stuff and ministry transitions. Daniel, why don't you start us off?
I feel like I'm out here because I fortunately have not had to transition to ministry for several years now.
Yeah.
I'm what, 3.5 years in almost at Faith Baptist Church. But most of my transitions have been just from church to church. I think we shared this over a year ago when we first started. Whenever my first position in ministry was at Quapaw First Baptist Church, came on as the associate pastor. And for me, it was an odd transition from seminary. I was just on campus at Southern a week ago, taking some guys to preview day. And shout out, Midwestern's preview day is coming up in a month, so make sure you're there for that one. but I was there, and I was in that seminary bubble where I was around. I was in class going to seminary, so like surrounded by the gospel there. At work, I had people that I was surrounded by that were also in seminary. I went to church, went home, like everywhere I was a seminary bubble. And then whenever I moved from Louisville to Quapaw, the bubble kind of burst. And I was met with, I don't want to say the real world, but very much felt different. So the transition for me, I think just from theological education to like a really good place, it was a wake-up call for what actual ministry was like. Just interacting with people, writing sermons. So a really weird transition, but one that literally carried me through. And then from then, it's been pretty seamless. I've only moved within like an hour of where I even grew up, from Quapaw to Grove, now here in Claremore. So a lot of my transition has been pretty seamless, pretty simple. Even though it's been some different positions each time, I've had to learn what the job needs and what I need to do. So I've been really fortunate to not have to transition 9 times like other pastors, maybe. Rio, what about you? You've had a big one.
Listen. Half of those are interims or known temporary positions, okay?
Like, fair.
Half of those are you're only going to be here for 6 months to a year, and it's understood, okay? So I didn't want to count those, and Colin over here is like, no, let's inflate your numbers and have you count those too. If you want to talk about vocationally, which churches have I been at? I've been at 5. One was a position right after college that, through a variety of circumstances and stuff that happened there, ended up not being there very long and moved to Louisville instead of pastoring in Oklahoma right after college like I thought I would. That transition was an anomaly just because it was – you know, not something that I had planned on doing, but the Lord made it clear that's what I needed to do. The one from Worthville to Gilead, Worthville Baptist is where I was associate pastor of students and families, to Gilead, where I was senior pastor. That transition was probably the smoothest of any transition I've had because that was 2.5 hours away from each other. So I was in northern Kentucky, in Carrollton, Worthville area. And when I went to Gilead, I was in central Kentucky is more where I was at. I was near Elizabethtown, about 2 hours north of Nashville, all that good jazz. Only about 50 minutes away from Louisville. So that was pretty seamless. I was at Gilead for almost 3 years, loved it. And the Lord made it crystal clear that he was moving us to a church in Oklahoma. And that transition was really hard. That's probably been the hardest transition for me. I think for my wife, the hardest one was from the church in Oklahoma to this one, only because there was 2 kids involved. But we moved from Gilead to FBC Verdigris. We had Jonathan was just born, and that was just a weird circumstance. The Lord made it abundantly clear that he was calling us there. We actually had people from Gilead pray with us about this opportunity, and they affirmed that they felt the Lord was also leading us there. So that was hard. We loved them. We went through COVID with them, went through a miscarriage with them, and, you know, welcomed our first child while there. So that was hard. We still have some lifelong friends from that church. Going from Verdigris, which I only had for about 2 years, to where I'm at now, FBC Grayson, that was harder on Renee than it was me. Mainly because we lived so close to her family. We were there. And moving, you know, we went from being 15 minutes away from her family to being 11 hours away from her family.
Yeah.
My parents live in Little Rock, Arkansas now. So that's, they've always been at least 4 hours away.
Yeah.
So I think it was harder for her because of that. But the transitions are, they're hard, especially when you don't give yourself a break between them. One thing I've done poorly is when I went from Gilead to Verdigris, I didn't even get a Sunday off. I went one Sunday preaching at Gilead to the next Sunday preaching at Verdigris. I should not have done that. That was awful. I should have taken a couple weeks just to kind of decompress. But when I went from Verdigris to Grayson, I took a week off in between and went to Daniel's church. And then I'm like, I don't regret doing that, but a part of me goes, should I have taken a week or two more to, you know, do that? But rental stuff and everything else going on just meant that was the right time to do it. Transitions are hard, especially when you're moving across the country. If you're moving a couple hours, like Daniel said, they're not as difficult. But Colin, you just transitioned too from Inola, Oklahoma to Kansas City. What was that transition like?
Yeah, I want to say kind of how we prayed through it, and then I would like to hear kind of you talk about Rio and Daniel as well, just how you knew that the Lord was leading you in that direction. I think that would be helpful because I think you pray through it well, you think through it well, and I think people would benefit from hearing that. It was strange for us because it wasn't anything that we had ever thought we'd be doing. We thought we had said goodbye to Kansas City. You know, that was a season. We were done. We're in Oklahoma. And I was in a kind of state of praying and fasting through just seeking the Lord's guidance on what was next at the church and how to lead effectively kind of going into the next season. And just was kind of, you know, just, I wouldn't say like flailing, but just wasn't landing on anything. It was weird. I was like, don't feel like I'm getting anything clear. And I'm a gut level guy in a lot of ways. I mean, I search through things, I read things, but like, sometimes that's just how the Lord leads me, is through kind of my gut level sense of where I need to go based on reading scripture, based on prayer, based on, talking to trusted friends and just kind of looking at things. But in this instance, it was just like kind of silence for a little bit, at least no clear direction. And so I just kept fasting. Rio recommended a really good book on it, and I was going through that. And then a friend from Kansas City texted me out of the blue, "Hey, would you be interested in this job?" I'm like, well, I was probably going to say no to that. "Hey, Aubrey, look at this text. I could do that. I could live in Kansas City." Really? You know, just shocked. I had just intuitively thought like it would die there. It would die when I brought it up to my parents or her parents or one of our friends or even, you know, people that were close to us in the church. And like every time people were like, "Well, we love where you're at. We love that you're close, but you'd be great for that. We would think you would love that. And I think they would benefit from having you there," which was really kind and humbling. And I was just like, well, I think I need to talk to Camden a little bit more and talk to them about it. And it just, I got more excited about it. My heart kind of started moving in that direction, and the door was just wide open. So it seemed like a natural inflection point. And that's kind of how the Lord made it clear to us. Like, he gave us a piece about it. He gave everybody near us a piece about it. He gave people that we were trusted advisors for a long time, and didn't have stock either way. They were excited for us. Rio told me, "If you mess this up, you're done forever. And you'll never recover." No, he didn't say that. But he was just like, you're an idiot if you don't, you know, take advantage of this. This is clearly from the Lord.
Those were my exact words. You'd be an idiot to not take this.
Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, it wasn't offered. I was like, Rio, they haven't offered me the job. But it was something that it was still hard. I mean, it's an interstate move, moved our kids away from friends, moved our kids away from their, you know, educational environment. you know, we're still trying to figure some of that stuff out, but the Lord's been kind. We have friends here. We have long relationships that we've maintained that are here. But it still feels different. There's always a cost to ministry. I think if you're looking for a transition that there's no cost to, I mean, it's not where the Lord's leading you. It's probably you running away from something, but that's just my experience. That's not gospel. That's just a gut level and intuition I have that, you know, Lord calls you to hard things. They're worth it. And there's so much good in them, but doesn't mean they're not hard. So that's how we
think. I think about my first transition, I talk about moving from Louisville back to Oklahoma. And for me, it was difficult in that I didn't really want to come back to Oklahoma. Like, I was determined as I was finishing up. So I graduated December of 15. I spent the last semester like sending out my resume. One of my pastors at my church was sending out my resume everywhere and hearing nothing back. Because I was sending it to like Kentucky, Indiana, Arkansas, Missouri, anywhere but Oklahoma. And then just in passing one day, my wife tells me, hey, I was talking to my friend Micah. Micah is a guy that she went to high school with, like best friends from childhood. And he told his brother, Matt, who's the pastor at Quapaw, you just finished seminary. And Matt said to Micah, you should have Daniel give me a call. And so Ashlyn tells me that. And I was just like, no, I'm not going to call Matt. Like, I don't want to go to Quapaw. Like, that's a town of 1,000 people. There's no stoplight. At that point, there wasn't a gas station. Like, there was nothing. Like, nothing in my heart wanted to go there. But I was like, I need to be kind. I need to be nice. Like, I'll give him a phone call. So I remember being at a Meijer, which is kind of where I worked in the time in Louisville. And I was like, I'm on lunch break. I'm going to give Matt a call. So I call Matt. He's bivocational. He's the, at that time, he was a coach and a history teacher at Wyandotte High School. And so he lays out for me kind of his vision for ministry, his need for his church. And by the end of that phone call, I realized I'm going to go to Quapaw. Like, this is where the Lord's calling me. And so at first it was like this realization of, do I really want to do that? And then kind of like you said, praying and fasting, and the Lord like totally flipped my heart. Like, there's no place I would rather be than Quapaw, America. And I came and visited, and it was so bizarre because I still remember walking in the side door to Fellowship Hall, and there was a bunch of older Baptist ladies in there cooking some food, and they came up to me and hugged me. Never met them before in my life, but they knew who my wife was because they were the school lunch ladies at the high school that my wife graduated from. So they know everything about me. They're talking about me. They're talking about my wife. They're talking about family. And they just welcomed me immediately. And I preached that Sunday, like in view of a call, and knew, like, as I'm preaching, I'm going to be here. And I already love these people. So for me, it was that transition, like I said, of bursting that seminary bubble, welcoming to ministry, but also a church that I still love dearly to this day. That was one of the smoothest transitions for me. I think it is whenever you know that that's where God is calling you and placing you. But there's going to be difficulty. It's going to be some frustrations here and there. But ultimately, it's worth it because that's where God's called you and placed you.
I would say for me, and again, I've had the benefit of transitioning more than you guys. I say benefit with air quotes there. But Worthfield to Gilead, again, that was the smoothest one, I think, all around. And that one was pretty clear. I was an associate pastor, but I very clearly felt Lord's call to senior pastoring. That's what my heart was. That's what I was called to do. I just knew the Lord hadn't opened a door at that time. My problem was at Worthfield, and this is a problem I've had a couple times in ministry, and I've had to own it, is I get overly eager and excited with that. And so when I had a church contact me while I was at Worthfield talking about sending your resume, Colin, did your lights just go out? Sorry, everyone. Colin, we're doing the video, and Colin's lights just went out, and it kind of flipped me out a little bit. But but this church was all about, like, hey, we're going to, like, you're our guy. And then I heard nothing. And then at 3 a.m. in the morning, got a messenger from the wife of someone on the committee saying they're going a different direction. So that kind of, in my mind, and I think my wife would agree, messed me up a little bit, because then I was like, well, I was so close. I was going to go pastor this church. Well, I'm supposed to be a senior pastor. So I sent resumes out everywhere under the sun in Kentucky mainly, and then heard nothing. I actually sent a resume to a church in Arkansas, and that got close. And then my wife just said no. no, like, we're not going here. And I was like, okay, well, that's pretty fair. I want her to, you know, love me in the transition. So we were there for a bit. I finally got convicted. I needed to quit trying to force this and just trust the Lord with it. And as soon as that happened, there was a church, Gilead Baptist Church in Glendale, Kentucky, opened up, prayed about it, sent my resume, and process was pretty smooth. It was funny because when I was applying to that position, there was another guy in my seminary classes applying who I was friends with. So we would text each other. Did you get another interview? Did you get the questionnaire? Like, constantly. And it was funny because it came down to us too. And he felt led to a church in Mississippi. So I don't know if he handed me Gilead or if I was above him, but those are just some things I'm not meant to know. And that was good. Transition from Gilead to Verdigris was hard. And again, that was harder for me. And it was because I didn't want to go to Verdigris at first. A friend of mine at that time texted me saying that he thinks I'd be a good fit for it. And I was just like, man, I don't know. I love my church. Things are going great. We're seeing people saved, baptized. We're discipling. I really don't feel led to leave. But I also I can't explain this. I also didn't feel like I should say no to him. And so I said, I'll pray about it. So I said, I'll pray about it. Prayed about it. And we put some guardrails up. I mean, we kind of did the whole put out a fleece deal and see what the Lord does multiple times in this process. We kind of changed the goalpost a few times. And every time we did, the Lord just affirmed that he was moving us that direction. I don't want to say we went kicking and screaming, but we went reluctantly to a degree just because we did not want to leave Gilead. But we also knew if we stayed at a place where the Lord did not where we were not supposed to be, that was only going to cause harm to the church. So we went after 2 years. That one was different because I reached a point in my ministry there where, and you both know this, I was done. I was spent. And I just through a series of events that happened, the Lord just released me from that position to where I knew I wasn't called there anymore, and I knew I needed to either start looking or I needed to resign in a few months. That was just kind of where we were at. And so FBC Grayson opened up, and the more I've talked to the search committee post me coming, the more it's just evident that God was moving me there, getting the church ready for that, because they started looking in August of 23. Yes, 23. And I saw the ad. Someone had mentioned us in my resume there. And I said, no, I'm good. I heard about that church. I knew about this church. I knew their pastor from afar and knew that he loved them. So for him to leave and go somewhere was a big deal.
Yep.
So said no. I said, if they're still looking in April, though, I'll send a resume. That was just kind of a flippant statement because you don't think a church of, number one, this size or a church that's this good reputation is going to be looking very long. And the same Sunday that their chairman of the search committee here got up and told the church that the first round was not successful, God's man had not applied yet, was the same Sunday I texted you two and said, I think the Lord is going to move me away from this church. So, funny enough, it was in April.
Yeah, I mean, you had a really clear sense of it, and that's not surprising here on the back end.
Yeah, and you guys, you know, you walked with me through that, so you knew it was you both prayed with me and felt that too, that it was time for me to go.
Yeah.
And go somewhere different.
Well, and you had fought to stay, you know, stiffened your spine and recommitted yourself, like, all right, let's lean in. And it was just very abundantly clear that, like, it was time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the big thing too. Whenever you're transitioning, the best thing you can do is bring in a couple trusted friends to pray with you who know you and also know your faults. Because, I mean, Colin, you did this. No, it might have been Daniel. One of you two did this. Might have been both of you. But whenever this came up, you made sure to ask me, is this the Lord or are you just trying to leave? I mean, you guys asked me that. Mm-hmm. And you grilled me every step of the way. Colin, you were one of my references.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sorry, Daniel. I still love you. But, I mean, so it was one of those, you know, Colin, I think you and I had conversations that went on for a couple hours a few times just about.
Yeah.
Is this the Lord? You were pushing me on things, made sure I was in a good headspace and in tune with the Holy Spirit with this. I think that's necessary. Any transition needs to be made with very close friends who know you, know your pitfalls, know your struggles, but also know your heart.
Yep.
Otherwise, and they need to be the ones that have full access into your life during that transition.
Yeah, so
I would say if we're talking about transitions, which we've kind of talked about for the last 20 minutes, that's the most important avenue aside from prayer and seeking the Lord is having friends who will help you through that process and know when it's time to transition. Because oftentimes they'll know along when you do about whether the Lord's doing this or not.
And no one's a closer friend than your wife. So she will often know at or before the time you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that church in Arkansas, no, we're not going there.
Yeah, if she ain't going with you, you don't want to go.
Nope. I do not. So, but here's a funny one. Colin, you know I have a story about this, but I'm seeing if you two do. You ever have a story of a church that was desperate to hire you and it bled for a weird interview process? Colin, why don't you tell that story first?
Do you want me to start with Wyandotte?
No, we're not mentioning names here, man. I'll tell that story, but I thought you were saying you have one.
Yeah, I mean, I had one, I think a couple of times. Yeah, two different times, maybe three. One of them involved in the same one that you were involved in, but I stiff-armed that.
Because you heard about what happened to me.
Because I heard what happened, and it was, like, transparent. But the other two, like, one was very rural. Like no one was moving there and I was like, hey, I'm willing to come. Like there was a family connection in the immediate vicinity. I started talking to them. Honestly, I asked too many questions cause like the answers were not good that I got. And I was talking about probably the wrong things that I should have been. Like it was seminary student questions versus like, just like pastoral questions. And, the answers I got were not great. And I didn't feel good about it. And then there was somebody in the meeting that probably shouldn't have been in the meeting. And he started talking to me and I was like, hold on, what's your role here? He's like, well, it feels like a family, you know, I'm like, you're not a member though. No. Okay. So that after that meeting, like I called somebody, I talked to one of my professors and they were all very helpful. And it was just like, nah, I'm going to pull my name. And they called me back and they had the same sense. And I was like, praise God. Then there was another one that was weird that just kind of dragged on forever. And I think it was clear, like my name got recommended to them and, like we got along fine, but it was just clear. It wasn't where I needed to be. Like the Lord wasn't calling me there. And they sensed that too. And God gave us the same sense. It was great, but it felt super weird because it was like, this seems like a great, great marriage on both sides, but it just, neither of us felt excited about it.
And you guys know this, the interview process, the coming in view of a call process, whatever you want to call it, it's like dating in that you don't want to come off desperate for the position, but you also want to make sure they're not desperate to get you to fill the position.
Yeah.
Desperation is never a good thing. I'll tell the story that Colin wants me to tell. Before I do, I had a church during that season where we were interviewing and everything, trying to try for me to become a lead pastor from associate pastor, that man, you could smell the desperation off of it. They were trying to rush everything. There was little prayer involved. The interview questions were, here are the two interview questions. What's your view on abortion and what's your view on gay marriage? That is all they asked me in the first interview. So, I mean, that stuff like that. And then, I mean, they were calling me multiple times throughout the week just to talk to me. And I'm like, okay, this is strange. Like, this is weird. But the weirdest one I have was at a church that had asked me to come. And they said, hey, we're looking for a youth minister. My name got recommended by a friend of mine from OBU. And they said, they reached out to me and I said, hey, I'm currently the interim senior pastor at a church in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. I'm not really looking to do another bivocational role or an interim role. I'd like to find either full-time or go to seminary. I said, but if you need someone to come fill in for you on a Wednesday night, I'll come preach to the youth. And then, you know, I might be able to try to maybe recommend somebody to help you out. So they said, okay, why don't you go ahead and come this date and preach to the youth. So I show up And this is like middle of nowhere, Oklahoma. And I walk in, pastor greets me, a kind man, believe he's with the Lord now. But he starts talking to me about the church, their vision, their mission. And he says, well, let me take you around and show you where your office is going to be. Okay. Thought I misheard him a little bit. Like maybe he's just saying like where I could have the office for today to get ready. Maybe. But he takes me around, and next thing I know, they have shifted from I'm preaching to the youth to I'm preaching to the whole church on Wednesday night. All right. I had to make some adjustments on the fly there. But did it, preached, got down, and then they had a business meeting immediately following that. And I thought that was strange. I'm like, this is weird. And they said, why don't you hang out with the youth? And they had this one lady who was helping with the youth stay back too. And she started saying, well, why don't you tell Rio all the things you'd like for him to do with us this summer? Okay. Now at this point, I'm like, do they think I'm coming? Because I was pretty clear that I'm not coming. Like, I was very clear on that. So students start talking about this stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And finally, one of them said, oh, you're not going to be here over the summer, are you? I said, no, I am not. So at that point, we just hung out. I rode a hoverboard for the first time in the sanctuary. That was fun. I almost fell twice. And then the business meeting ends. Pastor comes out, sits right in front of me in the pew and says, how much do we need to pay you to get you to come be our student pastor? Like, I don't like that. I said, hey, look, I'm an interim right now. I was like, I'm really enjoying this. I really don't feel led to come out here or to do this. And I mean, he is just like, I start explaining why I'm not going to come. He said, well, hold on. Before you say no, why don't you give it a week and pray about it? I'll call you in a week. And I said, okay, listen, pastor's name. I said, I do not feel led to take this. I feel no inkling to accept this position, but I will pray about it for one more week and I will give you the same answer in a week from now. So a week comes by, I get a call from him. Tells me his name. He says, Brother Rio, Brother, have you prayed about it? Have you thought about what you're going to say? And I said, well, while I appreciate the interest, I am definitely not interested and I do not feel called. And he goes, well, hold on. Why don't you take one more week and pray about this? And I said, I don't need another week. I have prayed about this. I'm not coming. Well, I'll call you in a week. So he calls me a week later. Same introduction, everything. And says, have you got good news for me? And I said, Brother, I've prayed about this now for 2 weeks. I do not feel in any way, shape, or form called to your church. I will not be coming to your church. I do not need another week to pray about it. If you need me to throw you names to recommend, I will do that. But I am not the man coming. He says, well, I don't understand why you wasted my time then, and hung up the phone. If you're a member of a search committee listening to this podcast, don't ever do that. Daniel, you got thoughts on that?
I got a lot of questions, but I'm not going to ask him right here, right now. But I think you make a really good point on search committees, because I think maybe there are some non-pastors listening. I remember one thing that one of the professors at a seminary talked about, how in the transition process, the interview process, the pastor is the professional, and like, you do this for a living. And the search committee is often church members that are trying to figure out how to find a new pastor. And so I think it can be really difficult. And I'm sure like those situations you described and that Colin kind of alluded to a little bit happen far more often than we would recognize, especially with rural churches, that people are just trying to figure out, how do we get a pastor here? And sometimes what you just told, we're going to do whatever we can to get a guy here, whether he wants to be or not, maybe. Yeah.
We need you to fill a role.
Exactly. Which can lead to a whole lot of problems down the road. But I mean, the transition process is just tough. I think it is for the church, because you want to find the right guy, and it's hard for the guy because you want to find the right church. I remember coming here and we went through our process of hiring our associate pastor a few months ago. And one of the arguments I made to the church in one of the special call business meetings was, if you look back on the number of conversations you had with me whenever I came, the total time we probably spent talking to one another was 4 or 5 hours across a phone call and a couple interviews. before the interview of a call came, I said, you get to know me as best you can in 4 hours when we have the opportunity to get to call a guy who we've known for 2 years. And I think that's part of the reason I'm really growing more and more passionate about churches raising up their pastors, raising up their elders. So you don't have to go find somebody somewhere else. And that's, one of the things I'm becoming more passionate about it.
Gilead did really well when I, I was leaving. That transition was weird and longer than it should have been, though, only because we couldn't move because Renee was close to her due date. So we announced we were leaving, and then we stayed for like a couple months afterwards, which I do not recommend. Just because it's not that we didn't love that time, but the church was ready to move on. We were ready to move on. It was just kind of, but during that period, they brought up the student pastor who was under me and said, hey, we're going to recommend him for senior pastor. And that was it. That was their one candidate they interviewed. They talked to him, but like, that's a guy they knew for about 3 to 4 years at that point.
Yeah.
So it was easy, but I would say this, just to wrap this up, transitions are hard. Make sure you've got friends to walk with you through it. And when you're in the search process, do not come off desperate.
Interview them. Ask lots of questions.
Ask good questions. We can talk about that at a different time, how to prepare for a search committee interview. Just don't come off desperate. It's the big takeaway from the day. Don't come off desperate. And enjoy the process as much as possible, but enjoy the people you're with more.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the advice I give to you, especially if you're leaving a church, finish strong. You never want to finish a church and people say goodbye and good riddance. Like, you want them to miss you when you're gone. And that can be difficult. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was good talking to you guys. Stay tuned. In 2 weeks, we will have a episode out where we interview Dr. Stephen Rummage. He is the executive director of Florida Baptist. And we are going to talk to him about planning your preaching as we come to the end of the year. How can pastors best set up their sermon calendar to better disciple their people? But until then, we'll see y'all next time.
Yeah.
See you guys.
Bye, everybody.